I'd like now to welcome back to the Radio Cafe Franz Vogt and Linda Marianello with the New Mexico Performing Arts Society. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mary Charlotte. Great to be with you again.
Always good to have you on the air talking about music, talking about classical music. And there's a couple events coming up that we wanted to just let people know about. This coming Saturday, the 7th of March, in the afternoon at 3 o'clock, there's an event called Brush Up Your Shakespeare. But it's music.
Yes, it is. It is a vocal recital with piano. Our artists are Christina Martos, soprano, Carlos Archuleta, baritone, and pianist Deborah Ayers. And this is a benefit for the New Mexico Performing Arts Society. We hope that people will come out and support our organization and our artists. These are fine artists, and the program will be extremely interesting and varied. All of the texts for the songs are based on Shakespeare texts, and that's why it has that title.
When they're songs, Shakespeare's songs, are they always sonnets, or what are we looking at in terms of the original poetry?
Well, Carlos will be singing something from Verdi's Falstaff, so that's from the play,
okay.
Merry Wives of Windsor.
Okay.
So the text is from that. And some of them, I would imagine, I don't have them all memorized, but some would be sonnet form, others would be excerpts, and whatever else interesting Shakespeare had to say.
Is there there must be probably a pretty big body of sung Shakespeare.
There is. Yeah. Ironically, it's very difficult to set Shakespeare to music because the poetry is so compelling and so good. It takes a consummate composer to be able to not get in the way of that and make a marriage of the two things.
Interesting.
And most of the people represented here have done that very well.
And if you look at the Nikolai, for example, you notice that, of course, Shakespeare's been translated into German there, and that's an art, too. Or, for example, Verdi's Otello, and that was a really just amazing libretto that was very faithful to the original English. So doing a work in translation can be, you know, when you're talking about a literary genius like Shakespeare, is quite a challenge.
And Santa Fe's own Oliver Présent is in this concert.
He's in the role of composer this time.
Amazing.
Yeah. Can't wait to hear his song.
Wow, our wonderful, amazing conductor is also a composer. Ladies and gentlemen. Okay, so that's this coming Saturday at 3 o'clock at the Immaculate Heart of Mary Chapel here in Santa Fe. And the big news on top of that is that a little later in the month is Bach's 330th birthday. So kind of a nice number. What are you guys doing to celebrate that? And we want to hear a little bit about the life of Bach, who I guess has played a big role in both of your musical lives.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, I think sometimes people, when they're thinking about Bach, they either think, oh, yes, he's very, very serious. And, you know, so you have to be kind of a long hair in order to want to listen to this music. But in reading this wonderful biography of Bach, one of the things that Franz and I both laughed about a lot was just how very human he was. When we think about it, you know, he must have had a really great relationship with both of his wives because he had 24 children and seemed to be happily married in both cases. His first wife died quite young, actually, and unexpectedly. And the other thing about him is that he really was, you know, what you could call a person who liked to enjoy life and every aspect of life. So, for example, there's a story about how he was consulted as an organist, and the city of Dresden, Germany, invited him to evaluate a new organ that was being built there.
He was famous all over Northern Europe as the person to go to for organ building. When they would build a new organ, they'd call in Bach to inspect it, or they would consult with him ahead of time as to the design. And he would crawl underneath into the guts of the thing and make changes and knew everything about every single detail of an enormously complicated instrument. So he was famous for that as well as being a good composer.
Right. So real kind of musician physicist almost.
Almost.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. In fact, he is called by Christian Wolff, who is the biographer that I was referring to earlier, he called him the learned musician. So he was the perfect balance, which is what fascinates me, the perfect balance between head and heart, or mind and soul, if you will. And that was what was so great about it. So he goes to do this organ inspection in Dresden. They put him up. You know, the city fathers, the people who invited him, are wanting to impress him and make him feel welcome and make him feel like a big dignitary. Put him up at the best inn. And there is even still an extant bill from the inn that shows all the brandies that he ordered over the course of the week that he was there and so forth. So he liked to eat well. He enjoyed a good drink. He had a beer allotment in every one of his contracts.
Being a good German, he always negotiated the beer part first.
There you go. Now, I think you alluded to something a moment ago, which I think is so interesting, that balance of head and heart, because Baroque music, a lot of Baroque music seems to embody that kind of simultaneously really mathematical and really emotional kind of expression.
Yeah, I think that was the doctrine of the affections that was taking place at the time. It was so popular in the Age of Reason that certain musical modes, let's say, would have an effect on your psyche and on your heart and even on your spirit. And Linda mentioned this book by Christian Wolff, who makes it clear that Bach not only was the genius that he was, but what most people are not aware of is that he had a great sense of humor. Well, obviously, anybody who has 24 children has to have a sense of humor. But we just presented the Kaffee Cantata that he wrote. He actually wrote it for his friends in the coffee house, Zimmermann's Coffee House in Dresden. Or was it Leipzig?
No, it was Leipzig.
Leipzig. And so that side of him is coming to the front, and it's very welcome to me because as a conductor, I see in the scores the humanity and actually the humor in a lot of his works.
And interesting. So do you feel like as a conductor, as a musician, the two of you, knowing his life story, knowing more about things like that, helps you conduct or interpret the music differently?
It certainly gives me more freedom. A lot of times I felt like I should put my straitjacket on when I conduct Bach, because it has to be pure and correct and all of this. And yet I see in his scores that he took chances and he did unorthodox things. So I try to follow suit.
Now, in Bach's time, when his music was being played or when he was playing it, was there an element of improvisation, or did they stick very close to the score?
In Bach's case, he wrote out everything. I mean, that is known for sure. Anybody who kind of studies his entire body of work really understands that, unlike some composers, for example, George Frederick Handel, as just in contrast to Bach, Handel left a great deal up to the performer. So he kind of just wrote out a skeleton of many pieces, and then the performer knew how to add different ornaments that were stylistically correct and so forth. But Bach, he really told you exactly what he wanted. And so in my own approach to playing anything of Bach, I usually stick quite closely to what he put down on paper.
I've insisted on that too with our up-and-coming performance of the Easter Oratorio, which is a set of numbers with recitatives in between, and the recitatives are dry sort of music that are designed to tell the story.
Right.
And most singers, when they see a recitative, they think, oh, well, let's just get through this. Let's do it as fast as possible. And so I've had to control my people and tell them, look, just do exactly what's written and it will be perfect. And they're beginning to trust me because the man was a genius at setting the German language.
So even the recitatives, which are the boring parts,
yes,
aren't boring.
They are not.
Not at all boring in his case.
No, in fact, they're my favorite part.
Very interesting. So tell us a little more about the Easter Oratorio.
Well, it's one of the last things that he wrote. Well, go
1849.
Ahead,
Linda. Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. And by the way, I don't want to neglect to say, regarding this upcoming weekend of Bach's birthday celebration, that it's a community celebration. We're working with the New Mexico Museum of Art. And there are a whole series of events, which you can find out about on our website. I don't want to go into too much detail here, but if you go to the New Mexico Performing Arts Society website, which is www.nmperformingartssociety.org, you can see the entire set of events for the weekend, which start with a lecture at Renaissance on Monday and go through the Sunday night closing concert of the New Mexico Bach Society, which will present Bach's Magnificat and his Easter Oratorio with orchestra, soloists, and the New Mexico Bach Chorale.
At the wonderful St. Francis Auditorium, which is a great place to hear music.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and all of the events, actually, except for the Renaissance lecture, will be in the St. Francis. And we're having a great time working with the New Mexico Museum of Art on this project. It's really fun, and the Saturday afternoon concert is going to involve amateurs, students, and some professional musicians all playing music of Bach.
Very interesting. So, as you say, truly a community celebration of Bach. Is there a lot of Bach in the schools and in music education programs?
I would doubt it. I don't think there's as much as there should be, let's put it that way. So we're doing what we can to raise consciousness.
And of course, you know, if you're talking about the university level, I think that, you know, probably the exposure would be somewhat greater. You think about, for example, we have one guy from the Santa Fe University of Art and Design who's going to be doing some Bach, possibly on mandolin from what I was hearing.
Oh my goodness. Tell us a little more about the New Mexico Performing Arts Society.
It was founded actually by a number of professional musicians here in Santa Fe and other fine artists who joined our board originally. And it was spearheaded by a couple of singers actually who worked with us, just coincidentally, who worked with Franz Vogt, our music director, for a concert that we did in the chapel in May of 2011. And they just so enjoyed the experience of working with other good singers who are based in New Mexico that they said, well, you know, you guys have to found some sort of group that we can work with regularly. And at this point, we had just done a couple of random concerts in the chapel because it's a nice space. And we weren't really thinking about a larger organization to kind of incorporate all these activities. But once they approached us and we actually became incorporated in the state of New Mexico and then became a 501c3 last summer, we realized that there were essentially three elements that formed the basis of our activities. A chamber music series called the Chapel Series at Immaculate Heart. And, for example, last year we presented a string quartet in residence at New Mexico State University, the La Catrina. That was their Santa Fe debut, which was a really nice event. So we always are focused on presenting really high-quality musicians who make New Mexico their home. We also left our charter open in such a way that we could include other art forms. And last season, for example, we had two small art exhibits that took place concurrently with our concerts. And this season, of course, we're bringing in Mr. Shakespeare for next Saturday's program. So we're bringing in some literature as well. We find that all art forms are complementary, and certainly we want to include them in what we do. The second element in NMPAS is the New Mexico Bach Society, which, as I mentioned, was founded in late 2011 by Franz Vogt, a number of professional singers in the area. And the Bach Society has really taken off. I think people of all stripes, ages, and even cultural orientations, I would say, love Bach. Everyone loves Bach. I had, for example, at Hutton Broadcasting, I was doing an interview over there with somebody, and she said, well, you know, I'm a heavy metal fan. And she said, did you know that people in heavy metal are crazy about Bach?
Is that right?
Yeah. So it's something that's really taken off. We've never had one in our state before. And I think that Franz has made great contributions to the excitement that the Bach Society is generating here, because he's very thoughtful. And he's been able to gather a wonderful group of vocalists. We've really been very, very happy about that.
We're constantly amazed at the level of talent that we still don't know about. We're discovering, just last week, somebody contacted me and I read her resume and I was astonished. So
here in the state of New Mexico,
this
here in
area
the state of New Mexico.
Is it draws people who are interested in great beauty, not only the physical beauty of New Mexico, but cultural beauty as well.
Franz Vogt and Linda Marianello are the New Mexico Performing Arts Society, on the web at nmperformingartssociety.org. For tickets to, I guess, both of these events, is that right? You can go to holdmyticket.com. You can also call 505-886-1251. And I want to thank you both so much for being with us in the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
Thank you so
much,
Mary Charlotte.